Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Gabe Shumway, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, local union workers in the Northwestern Graduate Program work toward a solution. Joni Mitchell is back on Spotify. And new spring resolutions, as well as this week's sports report. These stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. The Northwestern Graduate Worker Union approved their first contract with the university last month in a 73% to 27% vote. They've been in negotiations with the university since forming the union a year ago. The sizable no vote comes after a vote no campaign launched once the bargaining committee announced the union's tentative agreement. Reporter Paz Baum has the story.
8 years after forming and 1 year after voting to unionize, the Northwestern graduate workers have a contract. 73% of NUGW members voted yes on March 13th to a tentative agreement reached by the bargaining committee and the university 3 weeks earlier. Provisions in the contract include a $1,000 signing bonus, a $45,000 base stipend starting in September, 100% of premiums for dental and vision, an international student worker fund, and recourse with a grievance procedure.
The provisions that are most exciting to me are all of the protections that can be enforced through grievance procedure. Before, in many cases, whether it's like overwork in lab or a situation of discrimination, people didn't have a clear pathway to resolve those issues. And if they did have something they were supposed to do, they had to go through it alone. Now that there's a union contract, every issue related to enforcing that contract can be addressed through a grievance and with the support of a peer, a steward in your department who knows the contract and who's there to support you.
That's Esther Kam.
I was a member of the bargaining committee and NUGW co-chair for 23-24.
It was not a smooth road to victory for NUGW.
Big hurdles that we had to face were around lines that the university drew and trying to figure out how far can we push them to increase the benefits. Some of the big hurdles that we encountered were around, for example, international workers. There was further probably that Northwestern could have and should have gone. Similarly, for funding for health coverage, we added some great wins like vision and dental coverage at 100%, but Northwestern drew some hard lines around covering the spouses or children of grad workers.
For some grad workers, the provisions in this contract did not go far enough, 27% of members to be exact. When the tentative agreement was announced, a group of NUGW members mobilized to run a Vote No campaign, highlighting key issues like a lack of dependent healthcare coverage and insufficient funding for international students. If a majority of NUGW members had rejected the contract, the union would have gone on strike.
My name is Vineet Gupta. Area of study is sociology. I was an active department organizer. There are clear concessions we made in this contract that I think most people are in agreement on. And I think the question is whether those concessions are big enough and whether we have the capacity right now to keep fighting for more. We had concessions: income, back pay, international worker funds, it's just insufficient. The Title IX arbitration, independence arbitration, we didn't win that. Northwestern just completely shut out the accessibility side.
Heather White, a department organizer in mechanical engineering, highlighted concessions made regarding international students.
Northwestern's argument, primarily in the case of international support, was, well, international students can be quite wealthy. And it's like, no, the international students that get here can be quite wealthy, right? So I think that's an important consideration, that when we're not supporting the transition of these international workers to Northwestern, we're hurting our own diversity.
Marsala Smith has been studying at Northwestern for 10 years and is about to graduate. He voted no on the contract.
The biggest thing for me personally, because I am in rehabilitation, but I think the Non-auditing to make sure that the campus is ADA accessible is a huge thing.
Smith wants to ensure that the workers who come after him have a better quality of life at Northwestern than he's had.
I was making like 32, maybe less when I first got here. Over the past 10 years, if you factor in inflation, I'm sure there hasn't been any noticeable difference. I want people who come after me to be able to get to enjoy being a grad student. When my friends like, oh, let's go out to eat for drinks, I have to like look at my bank account. But maybe not tonight.
Other union members voted no for a more tactical reason.
I must have flipped back and forth about 6 times.
Heather White again.
The couple things that really flipped me over to voting no was, for one, I'm tired of making decisions out of fear of repercussions, in the sense that these are the right decisions to make in terms of what we're seeking to obtain. The other thing that was going through my mind was that it's not just an immediate effect that our decisions make. There are other unions watching how our fight is going to see what they can achieve. There are other universities watching Northwestern to see what they can get away with. Our movement really has much farther branching effects than just at Northwestern.
Proponents of the new contract argue that raising the bar for other grad worker unions should not be a priority when negotiating the NU contracts.
We're not negotiating with an industry, we're negotiating with an institution.
Despite the Vote No campaign, the contract was ultimately approved, but the fight still isn't over. The university and the union disagree on who is included in the bargaining unit covered by the new contracts.
The part of the contract that says who's covered by the contract refers to grad workers performing research and instructional services. And we do have the words including fellows in that article. However, the university is maintaining that people who are on internal or external fellowships do not require you to do any research or instructional services for the university.
NUGW is not allowing for these exclusions without a fight, though.
We've had over 500 grad workers already fill out an NUGW survey about their exclusions and are building campaigns with specific subgroups of those people to pressure the administrators of their departments, the deans of their schools, the provost, etc.
When asked about their desires and expectations for the future, all NUGW members I spoke to had similar answers.
I think it will be really important to focus on building up our strike fund so that we can have the ability to strike and support the people who are living paycheck to paycheck, but still get what we deserve.
One important next step that we are going through now is electing a committee to write our new constitution. The first element that is common in UE constitutions is to have a grievance committee that talks about the status of grievances, where grievances are coming up. And to reiterate, grievances are just any violation of the contract.
We also need to build solidarity around issues. No vote is like, we're wanting to fight for it. And so those give me confidence that in the next few years, we can really build some coalition around these issues.
For WNUR News in Evanston, I'm Passbaum.
In the past few weeks, fans have been enjoying Joni Mitchell's return to Spotify after removing her content for 2 years in protest of the platform's enduring support of Joe Rogan. Two professors weigh in on what this means for the pandemic, as well as the state of misinformation and streaming.
For the past few weeks, Joni Mitchell fans have had a lot to discuss. After nearly 2 years, her content is back on Spotify. Following Neil Young, she had removed her content from the streaming platform in January of 2022 in protest of Spotify's enduring support of Joe Rogan's podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience. It's been widely criticized for spreading misinformation surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as racist and transphobic rhetoric. Rogan apologized for the situation via Instagram, but admitted no wrongdoing on his part.
Do I get things wrong? Absolutely, I get things wrong, but I try to correct them. Again, I'm not trying to promote misinformation. I'm not trying to be controversial. I've never tried to do anything with this podcast other than just talk to people.
As part of a statement published on her website, she wrote, quote, "Irresponsible people are spreading lies that are costing people their lives." Has this changed? What might this say about misinformation or the politics of music and content distribution? Being one of the figureheads of American folk music, Joni Mitchell is decidedly not a child of the streaming age. Here's Ryan Dehoney, a professor for Northwestern's Beenan School of Music. He says that as an artist that primarily circulated her music through radio play and LP alongside touring, she was somewhat ahead of her time.
She does actually kind of record quite early. I mean, she's circulating through LP. That's how things were circulating.
Mitchell was also at the forefront of a musical movement, the resurgence of an American folk tradition in the 60s.
There's, in the 30s, a kind of real progressive movement that's using folk music. The resurgence of that movement in the 60s, along with a kind of burgeoning counterculture, is also part of a political moment that's developing a kind of resistance to these kind of bigger Cold War politics and kind of red baiting and kind of fears around communism.
Here's Professor Nathan Walter from Northwestern School of Communications. He says that Mitchell's political identity might have impacted how she made the decision to pull content.
You know, maybe I'm just a romantic, but I want to think that she made the decision. I don't think that it was a media team. I think she's of that generation. They viewed themselves also as activists. You know, she famously didn't perform in Woodstock, but she's the one who wrote the song Woodstock.
Walter says that Mitchell pulling content from Spotify can be seen as part of a long tradition of artists boycotting or distancing themselves from services, corporations, or even events and concerts for political reasons.
Seeger did it in the context of workers' rights, and John Baez did it in the context of Vietnam, and more recently you had people like Dua Lipa boycotting the World Cup in Qatar.
However, he says that by specifically protesting misinformation, Young and Mitchell might have involved themselves in somewhat of a losing battle.
Johnny Mitchell and Neil Young, other people who removed their content from Spotify, are trying to fight misinformation and not necessarily raise awareness for Joe Rogan. So the question is, was that the smartest move? Anecdotally, I can tell you that way more people were talking about Joe Rogan in this specific episode where he interviewed this guy who just shared a bunch of misinformation about vaccines.
Walter says that Rogan's objective ultimately came out much clearer than Mitchell's.
There's just more opportunities for Joe Rogan to defend himself, to debunk what Johnny Mitchell was trying to do, and we don't see that level of response from Johnny Mitchell. They have very, very different goals. Johnny Mitchell did something and just disengaged, and Joe Rogan kept on talking about it and explaining his position and explaining why he was right and why they were wrong. If anything, it actually amplified Joe Rogan's voice.
Although Mitchell re-released her content back to Spotify without a statement, Young wrote on his website that his decision came as other platforms like Apple and Amazon, quote, started serving the same disinformation podcast features I'd opposed on Spotify, end quote. That would mean that he'd need to remove his music from all platforms in order to keep protesting misinformation. It's a somewhat depressing view of the ubiquity of streaming platforms and artists' lack of agency in addressing it. Dehoney says that a major advantage of streaming is access, but even just getting this content onto streaming platforms can be destructive for artists that were active when the internet didn't even exist.
Every time there's a new format that gets introduced, there's a translation. There's all this kind of format loss and just kind of, you know, vast amounts of music just being destroyed. And that, you know, despite the illusion of the internet having everything, right, it's not true. Like, we're constantly losing just, like, so much music.
And the harsh truth is that few artists have found ways of widely distributing content without relying on these platforms, at least in the streaming age. But Walter describes how artists have successfully boycotted corporations and other industries, an example being Elton John's boycott of designers Dolce & Gabbana over homophobic remarks back in 2015.
There were a bunch of people in this world of fashion that came out against Dolce & Gabbana. They're in the same world. So that was effective in, you know, getting an apology, that was effective in getting some pressure on them. But this is not the case here because I would say there's very little overlap in the audience.
It's unclear how the platform will change in the coming years. But Walter says that perhaps Young and Mitchell helped establish some boundaries for content creators
that are not quite as strong and wealthy. And maybe for them, they saw that as a warning, as, you know, not everything goes.
But even with uncertain or unexpected outcomes, protesting at the expense of one's convenience or gain constitutes a valuable and powerful act.
You know, there's some power in taking a stand, regardless of whether it changes people's hearts and minds. And I appreciate that. I think there's something brave about it.
This is as true for anyone as it is for Neil Young or Joni Mitchell. For WNUR News, I'm Paul O'Connor.
January may be for making resolutions, but spring is the season of rebirth. After failing last quarter, our reporter, Gabby Schell, challenged herself to completely overhaul her habits in the name of health.
What do you think, guys? New quarter, new me? Like many people, my New Year's resolution included the usual laundry list of healthy habits. 8 hours of sleep, 3 meals a day, regular exercise, you know the drill. But between friends, I have not exactly put in the work to make my resolutions a reality. Maybe it was the rigorous Northwestern course load, maybe it was the winter quarter seasonal depression, maybe it was just pure laziness. Whatever the reason, up until now, I have been a healthy habit failure. New year, new me might not have panned out, but spring quarter set a new challenge. I turn 18 this spring, and I want to enter adulthood as a changed woman. To do this, I needed to start out spring quarter strong. I present to you guys how to turn your life around in 7 days. Sort of. All right, it's the Friday before spring quarter starts, and I've started planning out my healthy habits. After a quick WebMD search on how healthy people behave, I chose the most attainable, regular habits to work into my day. My goals are 10,000 steps, 30 minutes of exercise, 64 ounces of water, 8 hours of sleep, and 3 balanced meals, clocking it at around 2,000 calories per day. With that criteria in mind, I'd like to tell you guys that come Monday, I hit the ground running on my new healthy habits. Unfortunately, I failed every single goal and forgot to record any of my progress. Oops. Luckily, and this might be the first time in history anyone has ever said this, we do Northwestern Mondays. So I downloaded a fitness app, set some reminders on my phone, and woke up bright and early Tuesday morning, ready to right my wrongs. It's 7 on a Tuesday morning, I'm running on a little under 7 hours of sleep, and today, I turn my life around. For the most part, my first day of healthy adult habits went off without a hitch. I just went to a yoga class with some friends, and now we are on our way to get some dinner. But by the end of the day, I wasn't feeling refreshed. I was feeling tired and hungry. When I checked my fitness tracker, I realized I was around 800 calories short. The next day, I fell short again, and with my increased exercise, this calorie deficit posed real health problems. Okay. I just went for a run and I almost passed out. Like, literally the world was bending around me. The next morning, I reached out to Petra Rack, Northwestern Athletics' leading sports dietitian, who reminded me of a key meal I was missing.
If you're only eating 3 meals, you should be eating snacks in between. That's where you can get those couple hundred calories left in between because, you know, if you think about it, your body is, you're not eating for 3 to 4 hours in between your meals. Your body is going to start to run on very low.
The specific type of food is important too. When designing the athlete's meal plan, RAC focuses on the variety within food type.
You want to make sure that there is adequate amounts of different types of carbohydrates, because that's the main source of energy. And we want to make sure that, you know, there's one that has a whole grain, but then there's also, you know, a more like, you know, white rice or white pasta or potato that's a quicker carb.
Vegetables are another place where variety on the plate is key.
We always like promote, you know, having a colorful plate, because more variety in that plate, in that color, make sure that you're hitting all of the nutrients you need.
Before we ended our interview, I wanted some general advice on how to balance these healthy habits with a stressful Northwestern schedule.
Just about like balancing. If you're not fueled for your sport, you're definitely not going to be fueled for your brain, what your brain capacity is for working, and your time management, because like you can't be staying up until midnight finishing a paper.
After our chat, I went on a Target run to stock up on some healthy snacks to finish out my week strong. But Friday morning, disaster struck.
Okay, so it's Friday morning, and I'm definitely sick.
After a WebMD deep dive and multiple naps, I sat down to modify my goals. Exercising was out of the question, but three meals, lots of water and sleep, and a few leisurely walks seemed like just what the doctor ordered. But what I didn't account for was the power of a strict schedule in keeping these healthy habits. Those innocent naps ended up disrupting both my sleep habits and my meal times. I only ate two meals a day the entire weekend, and my sleep varied from 13 hours one night to just two the next. At first, I was really frustrated with myself, not only for getting sick, but for being derailed by something as small as a sore throat. But as I sat down to write this piece, I remembered something that RAC told me at the end of our conversation.
You don't have to be perfect at everything in your life. I would say that would be the biggest thing, is like just accepting that not everything is going to be perfect. And the fact that you're doing your best in these other aspects, you know, as long as you are, you know, eating majority of the time, you know, with whole foods and things that make you feel good. You're doing things with friends. You're being social. You're drinking water and some fluids, and you're exercising a little bit once in a while.
I guess what I learned is that turning your life around is more than a one-week process. Sometimes uncontrollable things come up, and that's okay. I learned to give myself grace and take the time to choose the habits that are most helpful to me. I didn't like counting my calories, but eating three meals a day definitely improved my energy levels, and I had a lot of fun exploring the SPAC group classes for this piece. Luckily, I have a month and a half left of my youth left to pick and choose what to keep and what to leave. For WNUR News, I'm Gabby Schell.
As Northwestern students get back from break, the spring seasons roll on. Here's Brendan Priceman with the sports report.
Hi, I'm Brendan Priceman. Here's your NU sports report for this week. A brilliant season for the men's basketball team came to an end in the second round of the NCAA tournament. It's the first time in program history the team won March Madness games in back-to-back seasons. In the first round, the Wildcats went up against Florida Atlantic, who made the Final Four last season. In a dramatic game that saw six ties and 10 lead changes, Northwestern got the last laugh. The Wildcats toppled the Owls 77-65 in overtime, which only happened thanks to a clutch Brooks Barnheiser layup. In the extra period, Ryan Langborg took over, scoring 12 of his 27 points in the final 5 minutes. Boo Booey added 22 points, and Barnheiser chipped in 13 and 10 rebounds. In the second round, Northwestern ran into presumptive national champion UConn, going down by as much as 30. However, the Wildcats rallied late, and while it wasn't enough to win, it was enough to make the score respectable. The Huskies earned a comfortable 75-58 win despite 18 points from Barnheiser and 13 from Langborg. In his final collegiate game, Bowie struggled, scoring just 9 points on 2-for-15 shooting. Luckily for Wildcats fans, they'll have one last chance to see him in purple. Bowie is participating in the College 3-Point Championship tomorrow in Phoenix. Turning to the diamond, Northwestern softball is starting to find its groove. After starting the season 8-7, the Wildcats have won 11 of their last 12 games. That streak includes ranked wins over Boston University and South Carolina, as well as wins in two Big Ten series. The streak has been fueled by offense, and Kansas Robinson is the key factor in that. The sophomore's batting average is currently a blistering .488, and her 39 hits have produced 23 RBI. As for the pitching staff, Ashley Miller has held down the circle. The graduate student's 1.22 ERA leads the team, and she's already struck out 105 batters. The Wildcats are most definitely in the hunt for another Big Ten title. And speaking of Big Ten titles, women's lacrosse has some major games coming up. The defending champions are back at number one in the country thanks to a two-game winning streak, which brought their record to 10-2. However, their schedule to close the regular season provides some stiff competition. This Saturday, the Wildcats will travel to College Park to take on second-ranked Maryland in a 1-versus-2 matchup. And on Sunday, April 21st, Northwestern has to travel to Ann Arbor to take on a perennial top 10 squad, the Michigan Wolverines. The Wildcats most likely will need to win both of those games to secure a regular season Big Ten title. However, they've got the talent to do it. Izzy Skane currently leads the country in goals with 53, and Madison Taylor isn't too far behind with 44 goals of her own. That concludes your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Brendan Prizeman, WNUR News.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Is it rain? Is it snow? I guess we'll never truly know. Today's forecast called for a bit of both, but all the precipitation seems to be behind us as tonight's show continues on. This dry evening isn't bound to be permanent, however, with showers expected to start up again tomorrow morning around 9 a.m., but they won't continue into the afternoon, so be sure to bring an umbrella on your walk to class, but you may not need it on the way back. The temperatures sure don't feel like spring, unfortunately, as highs remain in the low 40s over the next few days. Now taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. With the Ryan Field demolition in full swing, Northwestern has been left trying to determine where their football home games will take place this fall. One new consideration has come about, however, with interest in the expansion of Martin Stadium, which currently houses NU's soccer and lacrosse matches. Layoffs began in Chicago newsrooms today with the parent company of the Chicago Sun-Times and WBEZ. This move specifically targeted content creators and select radio programs, with nearly 15% of their unionized content creators now out of work. In international news, the Democratic Republic of the Congo has its first female prime minister. Judith Suminwa Tuluka was appointed by the nation's current president and aims to fight for peace in the ongoing humanitarian crisis in the country's east. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Sophia Quesa, and our reporters are Paz Baum, Paul O'Connor, and Gabby Schell. I'm Gabe Shumway. Catch our next newscast Friday, March 5th. For now, back to scheduled programming.